On Tom Road, back on the WGXC morning show. Well, we'll be still been on the WGXC morning show. We've just been listening to the news at the moment. But now we're live here in Acre at the Wave Farm Study Center. And I'm here with John Friedman, who is running for Hudson supervisor in Ward 3.
Yes.
We'll hear your opponent in the next hour. The election is this Tuesday, September 12th. Is it noon to 9 p.m. or is it all day?
It's odd hours. I think it is noon to 9 p.m. Primary voting hours are different from general election voting hours.
I think it's noon to 9, but all day Tuesday, September 12th. And this year, the Hudson election, especially the primary, is a big deal. You could say it's the... historic, because there's a whole new districts have been crafted, and so people are voting for new people. Maybe they're slightly in a different district than a ward than they were before, there's a whole new slate, and mostly everything's going to be decided in the primary. Is it everything, or is there anything in the?
There are a couple of contested races between the parties, but generally speaking, the Republican Party, I believe, only endorsed two of its members for seats, and cross-endorsed several Democrats, as did the Conservative and also the Independents and maybe the Working Families Party too, a couple of the Democrats. So by and large, all of the races are going to be decided on September 12th.
And you are currently, is it Ward 3?
Yes.
The alderperson in the city, but now you're the supervisor is what you're running for this Tuesday.
Right.
And you were in Ward 3 before, and Ward 3 now. Is Ward 3 much different?
It's the most changed, I think, demographically. The first ward became substantially larger in terms of geography, and took in a lot of what was the western portion of the third ward. The third ward's orientation now is more towards the north, and took some of the fifth ward and maybe just a tish of the fourth ward, only on the margins, really. And so it's changed, you know, a little bit more substantially than the others. But when the wards were redrawn and then they were approved by the voters, by the committee that drew them, there are certain standards that you adhere to. So change is always minimized. You always try to make it the smallest amount of change you can. And you try to follow natural boundaries and streets so that it's relatively simple for people to know where they are in terms of the political map of the city. And that's true throughout New York State, I believe. That's the standard for drawing district lines. So most people are still in the ward that they always were in. A few people who lived on margins of wards now have changed. My neighbors across the street that I live on are no longer in the third ward, but the neighbors on my side of the street still are.
And you had you were part of the group that got this change with before the Hudson City government was sort of non-representational. There's an arcane math system that I can't explain that when you voted, or this is a supervisor thing, I guess, that when you voted for, you get 174 votes or whatever.
Well, in the council, as the alderman, and it's still, this is the way it's done today, and it will be done this way until December 31st of this year, and then starting January 1st, it'll change to each alderperson will have a single vote. What was causing the weird thing, I think I had 383 votes, out of 2,500 votes in the total council, was that we were keeping our ward lines static, but population shifted. So instead of having one vote per ward, or per representative, we had to do this crazy apportionment, which is not, does not bear going into.
It's not very democratic.
It has the effect. I mean, it clearly had the effect in the city council of dampening democratic and bipartisan and multilateral decision making and working together, because certain representatives had essentially veto power over anything that happened in the chamber, and as a result, it disincentivizes people to work together because the outcome is preordained unless you can get one or two of these people on board.
It's basically, if you get California on board, then you can get it through. But if you, Delaware can't do anything by itself.
In the House of Representatives, yeah. Correct. Yeah, they just don't have the votes. So it really just discouraged people from doing anything. And so you've seen, you know, I think pretty much historically the city council, Hudson has what we call technically a strong mayor, meaning he's the chief executive, as opposed to a mayor who's the chair of a town board or city council. And is just one of a group of peers. We have a separation between the executive and the legislative, and that's called a strong mayor. So our mayor is separate. And traditionally, I think that the mayor always drove the agenda for the city of Hudson, even though the mayor, until recently, was always considered a part-time job. And it's kind of perceived as a part-time job in the city charter. The aldermen would just do whatever they were told, essentially. The mayor would come in and say, hey, we found this state program. Wouldn't it be great if we could apply for this grant money and then we would do this? And they'd say, yeah, sure. And or no, but usually, yeah. And that's how business was done. I think when Don Moore became president of the Hudson City Council about 8 or 10 years ago now, he really changed that dynamic, because Don was a very energetic person and very good at bringing people together. He always reserved judgment and kind of acted mostly as a facilitator as opposed to a decision maker, I think. And that empowered the council to begin to look around and say, hey, maybe we can do this, before the mayor said do this, or say to the mayor, no, we don't want to do that, we want to do this. And you know, if you want to do that, write a bill and submit it like any citizen can do, and we'll consider it, but we're not going to just do what we're told. And, you know, that was a very, effective council. I was lucky enough to be there for 4 of those years, and we got a lot of things done. Or we tried to. A lot of things were vetoed by the mayor. And then, because we couldn't work together as a council, because there was no incentive for people to work together under the voting system that exists today, we could never overcome a veto. You need so many more votes. And when there's a veto vote, I think I had 420 votes out of 87,000 or some ridiculous number. I mean, it was just crazy. And the other side of that, which made it so bad, was that it dilutes people's understanding of the system because it's so arcane.
Yeah, I can't possibly understand it. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's higher math.
And I've read many, many stories about it. I still, you know.
Yeah, I worked on it for, you know, almost 5 years, and I really don't understand the math behind the way that it works right now. I'm not very good at math, which is why, you know, I don't have a degree in math. But undermining the public's belief in government is exceptionally dangerous in a representative democracy where the people directly elect their representatives, and especially in a city. I mean, the smallest political subdivision that we all live in, the town or city or village that we live in, and in such a small one as Hudson, with less than 6,500 people in it, to not trust each other is really divisive.
And then you had, this problem made it difficult to eliminate this problem?
Yes.
Because you had had a hard time changing this law. I mean, the council wouldn't pass it, I don't know who wouldn't pass it. But
the council passed, there was a bill in the legal committee maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, to do essentially what was done by the voters in November of last year, which I think it's important to point out that the voters would always have the last say anyway, because the voters always have the last say in what the system that they have is. So we proposed to do exactly this. It was turned down by the council. We step back and said, let's just ask the question of the voters. Do they want to do away with this system and go to a more fundamental one person, one vote constitutional system? And that passed the council. that came out of the legal committee, and then it went to the full council. It was passed by the full council, I believe unanimously, or maybe with one no vote, and went to the mayor, who vetoed it. At that point, a group of people got together. I was one of them, and we decided we weren't going to use the council as the method of trying to fix this problem. We were going to go directly to the voters through a petition system. So we drafted a new law, and we got a lot of help from some really great people in town. It was kind of like a laboratory of democracy, just neighbors coming together, studying a question, forming a committee, studying this question, parsing it out into sub-questions, farming those out to the members of subcommittees who came back every week and delivered their homework and discussed it with their colleagues, and went through the process again and again and again until we had a final product. And we then presented it to the voters, and we presented it to the city council, which turned it down again, the finished product. We then went directly to the voters through the petition process, got it on the ballot, and it was a landslide, probably the greatest uneven election in Hudson in many years.
And was it supported by the Hudson Democrats?
The Hudson City Democratic Committee, I believe, did endorse it. I don't know if anybody else came out except, you know, the members of the committee and some of the members of the city council. I think there was a lot of questioning on the part of the supervisors, the Hudson City supervisors, the county board of supervisors, about the utility or wisdom of it all. But in the end, the voters spoke overwhelmingly.
Most resistance came from people that were already elected and perhaps fearful that they would not be reelected.
I assume people were really concerned about, you know, what ward they, you know, people who were going to be moved from one ward to the other weren't really thrilled with that. And we understood that. But there's only one way to fix this problem. And, you know, either you physically pick people up and move them, which clearly nobody wanted to do or would think about doing, or you have to change the lines. And that means that some people are going to be on different sides of lines. But it does, you know, at the end of the day, what you get is a better city government and hopefully better city governance. And I don't think anybody would argue that we don't need that.
Okay, so that's the sort of preamble to this, and then why don't you give us a general overall statement about why you're running now, not for Common Council, but for Ward 3 Supervisor.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I mean, I ran for the City Council, and I'm running for the Board of Supervisors for the same reasons, which is that I believe in good government, I believe in transparent government, I believe in government that solves problems, that's proactive, as well as reactive, but that also can think ahead and do things to make society better. I do believe that. I'm leaving the city council because I've been there for now six. This is my sixth year, three terms. I believe that for me, three terms is enough. I believe for everybody, a certain number of terms is enough. 10's probably too many, 2's probably too few. But I think that it's important that everybody understand that they have an obligation to fill those seats. All citizens, you know, grown, registered voter, everybody who's grown, reached majority, has an obligation to register and to vote. And if you think that you can do something, you have an obligation to try and sit in one of those chairs and do it, regardless of what you believe. That's how the system is designed. And that's how the system works. And so I think it's important that incumbents voluntarily leave and create an opportunity for younger people and other people to come in and have their voices heard and also to contribute to the solutions. I think that's vitally important. Nobody's the smartest person in the room. Nobody is the best writer in the room. Nobody is the best anything in the room. We're all in it together. If we don't do it together, it's not going to be supported. And, you know, that's why changing the voting in the city council is so vitally important. I'm really excited about what's going to happen next year. There's going to be a lot of new members with a lot of new energy. The downside is that the city of Hudson, particularly the city council, besides the minutes of its meetings, which are pretty perfunctory and never reviewed, have never been reviewed in the 6 years I've sat there, are the only record that we have. There is no continuity built into our system. There is no professional staff. There's no clerk of the city council. There's a city clerk, but that position is very broad. The council doesn't have a staff person who can do research for a member, who can gather information for a member, who can take a meeting with a vendor to the city if there's a question about a contract or something. The members have to do it all. I don't think it's above them or below them. I just don't think that most of them have a lot of time. And frankly, for a lot of the members, in my experience, don't ask a lot of questions. And so, they just don't feel that there are questions to ask. I, on the other hand, ask a lot of questions. And I like to get to the answers. And I like to understand what that means, whatever that is. And so I'd like to do that at the Board of Supervisors. I also think there's some things that the county can do that the city can't do on its own. And that's why we have counties. I think historically, Columbia County has ignored the city of Hudson. At least in the last, say, 50 years. And
you got a voting situation where similarly the rest of the county has a majority over the city of Hudson, right?
Well, we're Democrats, and a lot of the county supervisors aren't. The entire county supervisor contingent is Democrat, at least in a party affiliation, not necessarily in party philosophies. That's my own personal take on it. But I think that, there's certain things that the county does that don't really apply to Hudson for one reason or another. So, I think the big things that the county does is social services, which is huge. They do the county clerk's office, which includes the DMV. And then they also have the Office of Real Property Services at the county, which, of course, just collects taxes and issues a warrant. And that's basically what they do, with one exception. And the big exception is that they hand out state and federal highway money. And that's vitally important. But there aren't any county highways in the city of Hudson. And to my knowledge, and I can't get an answer that says that I'm wrong, and I've asked, there are no county projects in the city of Hudson. Now, the city did get a gift of sorts in the money that's coming in to redo the Ferry Street Bridge. That was originally slated for a project in Chatham. The folks in Chatham decided they didn't want to repair or replace the particular bridge, and so rather than give that money back to the state, the county needed to find a use for it, and Hudson was begging, and so we got the money. And I think
that's the only project.
But
for how long? 10 years? 20? I mean,
well, I've lived there for 9 years, and I can't tell you that there's ever been a county project in 9 years that I'm aware of. And I started going to city council meetings when I first moved to Hudson because they were entertaining. Really entertaining. And I think sometimes they still are. But they're also vitally important, of course, and it's interesting to see how politics in a small town works.
So what are the main issues you're running on for supervisor?
Well,
getting more road money? Is that...
No, because there aren't any. I'd like to use the slightly higher position, if you will, to work with some of the other supervisors on truck route issues. But I'm also interested in housing, particularly supportive housing in the city of Hudson. Over the years as an alderman, there were a number of proposals that came forward for supportive housing. And
what does supportive mean?
It's supportive housing is a kind of a catch-all phrase for housing that is set up usually in three phases. One is the lowest, three is the highest, where folks who are having difficulty remaining indoors, homeless people or people who are constantly kind of cycling in and out of homes, can be brought into a shelter system get some stabilization. They move into maybe a group home situation in phase two. And then phase three is more independence. And then phase four is what you and I live in, just private. And there have been some proposals to do that. And I don't think that it's not necessary. I do think it's necessary. And I think, a city has to provide for everybody. That's what makes a city. And that's part of its greatness. And we always have to be looking out for those among us who need the most. And clearly, folks who are having a difficult time like that need the most. And there's usually a lot of outside issues. So the big issue, I think, with supportive housing is the supportive part, which is the counseling, the drug counseling, the testing, the job counseling, and those sort of things that get people stabilized. And those have always been either lacking or minimized in the proposals that have come to the city. And that's why I've always objected to them. And my sense has always been that they were more about enriching the developer and not really much about providing services to the folks that they are ostensibly directed at. And they were basically arbitrage. You had developers who had found state programs that delivered tax credits for doing certain things, and those tax credits could then be stripped off of the package and sold to third-party investors at a profit, folks who needed a tax benefit. And that was set up that way to funnel investment into these type of services, but it wasn't done to then make these folks who are doing it richer and making the community that they're in poorer. Done properly, it should make everybody better off. And I think there are ways to do it, and I would like to work on that. Over the last 6 years, particularly over the last, the 4 years that came before this prior to, I learned a lot about it because I studied it, because it was constantly coming up. And so I'd like to be able to turn that around, that knowledge around, and use it in a positive way. I also think that, there's some other things that the city and the county can do together. And one of them is a town park in Hudson, a more sports and recreation oriented town park than what we have right now in Oakdale. That'll be better for the youth department make use of some land that's really sitting idle in a city that has very little open space. And those are two things that I think I'd really like to work on at the county level and that I can work on. And then I would also like to think about maybe removing the five city supervisors from the charter. And right now, Hudson has five supervisors, and I think that dilutes our voice. I think that we have elected every 2 years a mayor, and that is our chief executive, and that should be our voice. And we should have a unified voice, and it'll make us stronger.
You want to be like the other towns where the town supervisor is the supervisor at the Columbia Board of Supervisors.
That's correct. And I think it would give Hudson a stronger, more coherent voice, and it would provide a stronger message back to citizens. And again, things that strengthen our everyday understanding of what government is doing strengthens our government and strengthens our society, because we directly elect these people. And so I think that's another thing that
Hudson doesn't have an advantage, because it has five people that can take meetings and five people that can do things.
That's the argument. But I don't see anything happening. I don't see anything being done. If it is, I'd love to hear about it. But when I ask, I'm told, well, we'll send you a list. And I never get the list. I say, just give me one example. And no, we're going to send you a list. But the lists are non-existent. The promises are empty. And I don't think that's what we should be getting from our county.
So you're running to eliminate your position.
Yes, I am. As I said, I believe that elected officials should step down all the time.
You talked about housing, restorative, is that the word?
Supportive.
Supportive housing. What about affordable housing? There's been a lot of talk about that in Hudson. Is that a Hudson issue or a Columbia County issue?
It's a United States issue. We have increasing disparities between folks who have and who don't have, and housing is fundamental. I was always taught, housing, you should budget 25% of your after-tax income for your housing. Well, for a lot of folks, they're spending 33% now. And that's putting a tremendous pressure on people who haven't done anything differently. They're doing what they were told. They're behaving the way they were told they were expected to behave. And things aren't working out. That's a much larger societal issue. I'd love to see Hudson with a housing authority and you know, taking initiatives to go out and build housing, affordable housing, and managing it in a proper way, and creating paths for ownership. But I'd also like to see the city pick up the garbage, and I'd like the city to do some other kind of fundamental things. We're a terrible landlord, the city. We own, I think it's 5 or 6 residential properties, not all of which are in Hudson. One of which is out in Churchtown.
You're talking about the city or the county?
The city.
The city owns.
Yeah, city, yeah. And we're terrible landlords. And we can't even manage the docks at our waterfront. And by docks, I mean dock, because we have one, you know, significant size dock. We can't manage that. Taking on the staggering infrastructure required to acquire and prepare and then construct and then manage and bring in tenants and continue to manage a housing project is clearly beyond the city's abilities right now. There is no depth. There is none. There's a mayor, and the mayor has an assistant, and then there's nobody. And who is going to do these things? And how is it going to be paid for? We don't have even the beginnings of these answers. So in the short term, at least, and probably in the medium term, we need to look to private investment, and we need to look to developers who do these sort of things because that's what they like to do. And they're out there. And I know that there have been sporadic talks, but nothing's ever come of anything. And I was on the board of Habitat for Humanity, and we built a lot of single family homes in Hudson, but that's not what Hudson needs anymore. Hudson, and that's why I left, because they insisted on building single family homes. And I understand that's their forte, and they're very good at it, and they're great people. It's a great organization, but it just wasn't serving the city. And I couldn't continue to work to push something that I didn't think was good for the city.
You think it was bad? I mean, it just seems like it's a drop in the bucket.
If you're going to take an empty lot and turn it into a single family home when it could be turned into an 8-family home by building taller and more densely and filling the lot more than the 40% that's, you know, under this zoning. Yeah, I think it is hurting because that house isn't going to get torn down for 50 years. You know, we built really good houses, and they're incredibly energy efficient because Habitat, Columbia County Habitat, very aware that, you know, you can't really change people's property taxes and you can't change their school taxes. You can't change the cost of paint or replacing a window, but you can try and change and control the cost of energy by not using as much. And so we built completely passive houses. And before that, Energy Star 3, I think, or 3.5 houses. So people could try and keep those costs under control. And that's vitally important. And those houses shouldn't be destroyed until they fall down, if ever. But you know, taking those lots away, and they were all city lots, you know. So if the city had wanted to partner with a developer who could have built more, and that, you know, more just increasing the supply will have a liberalizing effect on prices, right? It will lower price. It'll take some of that pressure off. And, that's incredibly important. The other thing that the city needs to do while it's trying to do that is also to understand more fully. And I really think there's a lot to know here about short-term rentals and what's happening in the terms of the conversion of private property from long-term stable family rentals, 1-2-bedroom studio apartments to Airbnb only, because the profit is just so staggeringly attractive to people, and so many people are under pressure financially. I understand all those things, but from a government's point of view, we need to look at the health of the community and the neighborhoods that make up the community as a whole.
So you might be for some sort of B&B limitation or...
I don't know. I would, and I am for, and we're working on it, and we just requested from the treasurer's office last week at the Arts, Entertainment, and Tourism Committee to code all of the registrants under the city's new lodging tax by ward. So we can maybe see if that has any enlightening effect. But I hope that the new council and the new mayor will pay particular attention to this issue. It's vitally important. And it is putting a lot of people in an insecure place that I don't think they need to be in. And as a result, our whole community suffers because our neighbors are suffering.
And so the city can't really, doesn't have the depth to work on some development, partner with some organization or something. So basically can only do things on the outskirts, the regulations and regulating B&Bs, or what else can we do? What else can Hudson do to help this problem? Because rents are going up. People don't have places to live. They're leaving Hudson because they can't afford, and they're going to Catskill now.
Yes, I know. And it's bad. And I think everybody understands that it's bad. There's a lot of simple solutions, but there's so many negative externalities, and most of which probably aren't even known, as negative externalities generally aren't known until it's too late, from a lot of the simple solutions, I think. And you see examples of that in other places. What we can do is one of the things that we're trying to do with the new, with the old police station and court building, the Economic Development Committee, which meets next week on Thursday, 6 o'clock, come on down. We're requiring whoever buys that property to tear down that building or build up from it, go up four stories.
Is it one building or two?
It's one building. Yeah, it's one building, but it's two lots. Yeah, two lots. Build a four-story building. And it can't be a single family home. It can't be a two family home. There has to be retail or professional space on the first floor on the ground level. There has to be parking set aside. It can be inside. Because of the grade there, it's doable. The police did it when they were there. We want a minimum of four apartments in the building, of which one will meet some sort of guideline for what affordability is, and Alderwoman Garriga is actually researching that now for us so that we have a better understanding of that. We know what to put into the draft of the bill. And that's something that the city can do. That's a really small step, but the next step might be the next time that we have property available that comes, you know, that we unfortunately have to take because of taxes that aren't paid and we take title to it that way. Rather than just selling it off to the highest bidder, and we still have the opportunity to do this because we're just working on some new properties that we just acquired title to recently, and putting those same sort of requirements on them. You want to buy this property? Fine. If you want to buy it and build a single family home, you're going to pay this. If you want to, you're going to pay whatever you pay. If you want to buy it and you turn it into affordable housing according to some formula, then you know what? Maybe we can give you a rebate on the purchase price. There are a number of things that we can think of now that are less risky than just jumping in with both feet into an area that we don't have any knowledge about. We just don't. I don't, and none of my colleagues now do. Rick Rector, exceptionally capable man. He's going to make, I think, a great mayor, but he doesn't know anything about it either. And I'm not aware that any of the anybody who's running for any of the open seats or even any of the contested seats brings any of that knowledge to the table either. And it's also not clear to me that the city has the power to do it unilaterally anyway, meaning that I think we would probably need a home rule message from the legislature, from the city council, signed by the mayor, go to Albany, where they would permit us to pass a law that we would propose to create this type of public housing. I'm not sure. I haven't gotten a definitive answer from city attorneys yet. In fact, haven't heard from the city attorneys in a long time. So I don't know. But I think that, you know, there are these incremental steps, and I think they do need to be taken. And it's part of the larger, you know, debate that I think Hudson has with itself every so often, which is never been publicly debated, but I kind of get like these tones of it all the time. Is, are we a town or are we a city? You know, are we actively trying to keep people here, or are we just like, hey, we're a nice town and I wish you could stay longer, but see ya. You know, like a lot of bedroom communities and suburban communities are. And I hope we're a city. That's why I moved there. I fell in love with it the first time I visited, as so many people do, and why I want it to succeed, and why I want it to succeed for everybody. There's a lot of snide conversation that takes place in town, and some of it on the city council. about, well, what are you going to do? I mean, it's gentrification. It happens everywhere. And if you can't afford to live here, you can't afford to live here and you have to go. That's a very callous and short-sighted view in my mind. I'd love the city budget to be $25 million a year instead of $13 million, but I don't want to pay double the tax. I know my neighbors don't. That means we have to increase our tax base some way. But I'd rather have my neighbors today than $25 million tomorrow. So,
I think I've seen you more on YouTube than in person, thanks to Dan Udell and recording the Common Council meetings. Would you like to see... First, two questions. Would you like to see the Columbia County Board of Supervisors actually web stream their meetings or print agendas well in advance of meetings? And B, I guess you're criticized sometimes as a disruptive force in the Common Council meetings. What is your response to that?
Well, in terms of the taping, when the Udells started taping the city council meetings, which was before I was elected, I was the executive producer, by which I mean I was the guy who signed the paper at Mid-Hudson Cable so that they would be relieved from any First Amendment claims or you know, liability. It would be my responsibility what was put on the air. And as far as I know, I still am. I don't know if those videos run on cable, but nobody's ever told me that I was relieved of my duties. But I've never worried about it. And I'm all for it. You know, I've gone to Board of Supervisors meetings and the agenda is called now, you know, we will vote on resolution 692.3, call the roll. What the hell does that mean? I have no idea. It couldn't be more opaque. If it was held in dark in a locked room, it couldn't be more opaque. And then there's this kind of a unanimous vote in one direction or the other, and then they move on. So, yeah, I'd like to see a lot of changes at the Board of Supervisors in terms of transparency. And I'd also like to see a lot more people get up and be disruptive. I didn't get elected. I've never run. I never go to a meeting. With my sleeves rolled up so that I can swing harder or faster. That's not the goal. It's not the purpose. I don't enjoy it. I'm an advocate. It's what I do for a living. It's what my training is. I've been doing it for a quarter of a century. It's kind of hard to get out of your blood. And I don't really make any excuses for it, but that's an explanation. I don't like bullets. I don't like when people hem and haw and basically just say things to justify a bad decision when good data is in front of them. 99% of what the city council does is so uninteresting and run-of-the-mill and unanimously agreed to by everybody because it's just common sense stuff. And the other 1% is still common sense stuff. Because our powers are so limited. We can't make drugs legal. We can't change the penal law. We can't change the real estate taxes. We can't change anything. We can collect the tax that we're empowered to collect, which traditionally has been property tax, and just recently we added a new one. We get our share, or maybe a little bit less, probably less, of sales taxes that are generated in our zip code, because that's how they're collected and reported. So since we share our zip code with five municipalities, it's kind of a crapshoot as to who gets what. And then every once in a while, something just so insane happens. So the city enters into a lease to lease portion of the armory that it is going to use for a senior center. And we sign a lease with the developer. And the lease says we have to pay, for some reason, it was $2 a year in rent. Usually it's $1 a year, but I guess they decided to double their profit. So $2 a year, which seemed like good rent to us. And so we approved it. And we were supposed to get a sheetrock box, right? We were going to go in and we had to decorate and put in the flooring and, you know, whatever. Fair enough. You know, commercial lease. I mean, that's what they look like. And then about a month before it's supposed to be delivered, we get hit with this demand. You pay us $100,000 and we won't give you the space. Well, fine. Don't give us the space and we'll see you in court. I mean, this is the system we live in. And so I assume that my colleagues, who are always very parsimonious with public money, I will say that, they don't like to waste money. They don't even like to invest money wisely. They'd much rather sit on it and stare at it. As a council, generally, that's how we behave. They turn around and say, yeah, let's give this guy $100,000. Now, it turns out that this guy is the richest man in town, and I don't mean that figuratively. I mean, he's the largest property owner in the city and probably with the highest net worth. And we're giving him $100,000 of everybody else's money for no reason, none. We walked through the contract twice in the council meeting, the city attorney and myself, and we explained.
You're an attorney too, right?
I am. And at the time, I was the chairman of the legal committee. And I'm a commercial attorney, you know, a corporate attorney. I do transactional work for a living, which includes commercial leases. I know an awful lot about this stuff. And we explained to them exactly why we didn't have an obligation to make this payment. In fact, we had an obligation not to, because it wasn't our money. It's the people's money. And yet we gave it to them. Now, that was the moment when I called my colleagues thieves. And intemperately, because I don't take kindly to thievery, particularly in public. Although I have to say, I guess it's better than doing it in private, because we got to see who everybody was. Now, I have no problem with that. If you don't want to be called a thief by me, you shouldn't behave like a thief in front of me. If you don't want to be called a fool, don't behave like a fool. But I have no patience. And I'm not a politician. I'm the first one to say that. I'm surrounded by a lot of them, and some of them are good. But I'm not one of them.
All right, we've got just 2 minutes left with John Friedman, who's running for supervisor in Ward 3. Tuesday, September 12th is the Hudson primary. You want to give us a final minute and 50 seconds of why people should turn out Tuesday?
Well, you got to come out and vote. If you don't vote on Tuesday, your vote on in November is going to be almost meaningless in most of the races in the city. You know, the political subdivision you live in, if you live in the city of Hudson, even on weekends, has more to do with your day-to-day life than what happens in Washington or in Albany or in London or Brussels. The decisions that the mayor, that the city council, that the chair, that the commissioner of DPW make on a daily basis affect your life every day. This is vitally important.
And well, why they should vote for you too. But
Well, you vote for me because I'm going to stand up and I'm not going to let anybody roll over the third ward. I never have and I won't. I'm going to stand up for the city of Hudson and what it's due from the county. We pay taxes to the county, yet they I would imagine that the county pays absolutely nothing to the city. In terms of doing business with its vendors and its merchants. and I don't think that that's acceptable, and I will fight to change that. I'll also push to get us a nice town park, perhaps with an in-ground pool for folks who like to swim and greater transparency in government. Like I said, I don't suffer the foolishness of government and of politicians, and I'm there for the people who elected me. I always have been, and if they see fit to send me to 401 State Street starting in January, I'll continue to do it, and I hope that they do.
All right, John Friedman, thank you for coming out. Again, he's running for supervisor in Ward 3 in Hudson. The primary election, the Democratic Party primary election, is this Tuesday, September 12th. We think noon to 9 p.m.
That's right.
That's at the same normal Hudson locations.
Well, if you've changed wards, you vote in a different place. But if you the voting places on a per ward basis have remained the same.
So if your ward changes, you got to figure out where to go. But you already should know that your ward has changed. People may be showing up, I guess, at the wrong wards, and there might be a little disruption.
If you were in the fifth, you now vote at the St. Mary's School. If you were in the third and you're now in the first, you still vote at the St. Mary's School. I think everybody else stays the same.